Money FM 89.3, the best of Saturday mornings.
Let's move on to our guest, first guest this hour. The topic is ESG. Now, we talk about ESG quite a lot on the show.
We did this morning.
We did this morning. But ESG takes on different forms. And we want to talk now about ESG as risk management or ESG as playing defense. What does that exactly mean? To unpack that, our guest in studio, Ida Welbank, the sector leader for Enviro Solutions and Consulting. Ida, it is a real pleasure to have you with us in the studio today.
Well, thanks for having me. Very happy to be here.
Talk to us about, first of all, Enviro Solutions and Consulting. That is your the organization you work for. What do you do?
All right. So we are one of the leading environmental and safety consultancy firms in Asia, homegrown and headquartered here out of Singapore. Now we have offices across five countries in ASEAN. And what we do is we bring international and multidisciplinary skills to a wide range of challenges for our clients across, you know, really traditional style environmental consulting of site investigation and remediation to health and safety due diligence to what I do, which is ESG and sustainability due diligence across M&A and financial investments.
So a company comes to you for consulting. What are they looking to be consulted on? What do they need to achieve? Give us some like concrete examples.
Well, and at the core of it, what our clients are trying to have is peace of mind. The idea that whatever they're buying or investing or what they're working on is meeting both their internal standards or an external stakeholder standards, like if they're looking for investment, what is the bank looking for in terms of ESG? And also trying to make sure that their people are safe and healthy and meeting their internal requirements and metrics. So what we help provide is peace of mind. And my whole life is basically spent trying to prove that greenwashing isn't happening, that what our clients is saying is defensible and real.
And this is, you know, the past 3 or 4 years, let's say 3 years, this whole topic has just exploded and is looked at so many different ways. Like you say, on the one side, there's people that are absolutely trying to do the right thing for the right reasons. On the other hand, there's charlatans who are trying to just look good to internal or external audiences. So how do you go in and really take that apart and figure out who's doing the right thing and who's just talking about it?
You know, and that's actually a really good question. So let's take this back a second. You know, what is even ESG?
Yeah.
You know, we use these terms, and sustainability also. They're really big terms. They mean so many different things based on, you know, what country are you in? What industry are you in? What are you trying to accomplish? So when our clients come to us, a lot of the times, you know, especially in the beginning stages, they're not quite sure where they're going. So what's ESG? It's the framework that we're using kind of globally today that says, okay, this thing's pretty good. You're doing good here, but maybe we need to do some work over here. It's how we benchmark, you know, and how we think through what we're trying to accomplish. One of the things that we try and think about, and to get to your other point about, you know, how is ESG defense, is, you know, take away our feelings about it, right? You know, is climate change real? Is it not? That's not a question anymore. It's things are happening in the world that affect business continuity or business sustainability. And when you step back and look at it from this view, what is every business leader really good at? Recognizing risks to their business. And that's what this is doing. ESG is just different risks to identify.
So it's nice. If I understood it correctly, there was an element, or at least a perception, that ESG was sometimes felt like a bit of box ticking. You know, in this current climate, you want to be seen to be doing the right things. But you're coming at it from a slightly different perspective, as if there's no choice anymore. We have to do these things because we're dealing with the implications of climate change, supply chain issues, and so on. It's not about doing what's right or wrong. It's about doing what's right for a sustainable business. Would that be fair?
That's exactly correct. And that resonates with everybody, no matter where they're sitting. That is something that resonates with every industry and every business leader.
You talked about requirements, and we're in conversation with Ida Welbank, the sector leader for Enviro Solutions and Consulting. You talked about investors wanting to know what's happening with the company's ESG policy, of course. But boards are increasingly active. Shareholders are increasingly active in wanting to make sure that the companies that they support or are part of are doing the right thing, you know, from supply chain all the way through the final product or service. Mm-hmm. And how is that changing just even in the last year or two from your perspective? My assumption is it has become much more complex to have to go back into supply chains, for example. Mm-hmm. But from your perspective, how are you able to do that more efficiently, effectively now than, let's say, a year or two ago?
Well, and you're quite correct. The dynamics are continually changing. And with the look at supply chain, it does increase the complexity of what you're trying to understand. And that can vary across industries. What we do, though, and one of the things that's actually better in the last couple of years is the amount of data that's becoming available. Mm. In the beginning, I mean, even a handful of years ago, data didn't exist. Like somebody would say, oh, man, you've got to go calculate your carbon footprint. And, you know, the person on the other side of the table would be like, sorry, what?
Yeah.
you know, and then just even thinking in the beginning, well, okay, well, what's my carbon footprint of just where I am? What's my warehouse? What's my building? Okay, that's what we call scope one, you know, starting really small, things that we can see and understand. That was a really good stepping stone. And then it was like, okay, well, how about bringing some things in? Or how do we get from our facility to our end user? Okay, well, that's scope two. Now, where we're really in the weeds, and there's still a lot of data gaps, is what we call scope three, which is looking backwards, which is into the supply chain. Mm. And a lot of this is being driven by regulations out of the EU in terms of carbon reporting and other things. But as you say, stakeholders are getting very, very loud. They're very interested in both sustainability as a financial investment and, of course, our kind of long-term survivability.
Yeah, scope three is something Steve Okun has talked about on this show before. I do find it fascinating when you start to look back into the whole supply chain of your business. Do you ever reach a scenario where there is no fix? I'm just thinking aloud here. You go back in the supply chain, you'll find a factory somewhere in Southeast Asia that's producing something that is not sustainable, and yet they cannot find a different way of going through to keep the supply chain connected. What do you do in those situations? I'm sure it must happen.
It does. And especially, I mean, Asia's going to see this significantly because a lot of supply chain, if you go back far enough, comes into SMEs, small and medium-sized businesses.
Exactly.
So what, first of all, I mean, when this does happen, you know, it's not a binary. I mean, yes, we ultimately want to get to the solution, but your first decision isn't, well, okay, I'm done with this supplier. No, it's, I have a trusted relationship with these people. How do we help them improve? You know, let's see if there's a process there where they can grow and they can start to meet these needs, right? You know, and if it's impossible to change, I mean, maybe there's other innovative things that can happen. And you're seeing changes and improvements across all of the supply chain as these questions are coming down. You know, some of that's to meet the ESG standards, and some of it's taking a look at it and realizing, hey, this makes a dollars and cents reason to change, and this is an improvement both for us and an improvement for ESG metrics. Mm. So I'd encourage folks not to think of it as a binary, but as an opportunity for continual improvement.
Yeah. But, you know, are stakeholders willing to give them time to figure that out? Because it seems like the pressure is on to get it right now, right?
So, and I think there's two different things at play, right? There's the aspects that we see on social media, which are very much do it right now, it must be done, you know, global crisis, you know, very high energy, high emotion. Well, that's always been the case across environmentalism. I mean, if you go back far enough, you know, when the first environmental regulations came out in countries, you know, it was fix it now, fix it now, fix it now. The mechanisms behind that are always slower. You know, there's if you're looking at something that's a mile deep, the high energy, high emotion that's driving this is only in that top bit. But then underneath is all of that work and that effort. And that does take time. But the continual movement is what matters.
Mm. I'm fascinated also from the consumer perspective, because I'm sure all companies would want a neutral carbon footprint, would want to do the right thing. But there's always a cost element, isn't there? Mm-hmm. To use extreme examples, the Indonesian forest fires would be one, or migrant labor being used in factories across Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. To correct these or to fix these, in inverted commas, there's going to be a cost element, i.e. the final product is invariably going to be more expensive. How do you get that across to the consumer, that you might have to spend a little bit more if you don't want the Indonesian forest fires, to use the obvious example.
Or the internal stakeholders as well, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. The business owners.
Yeah. Well, so and for your external stakeholders, this is where it really matters that your data is real, that you're not just ticking boxes, that you're not just window dressing. And we've seen historically that, you know, while initially that sort of greenwashing was very popular and it seemed to have worked, consumers are very smart. They have access to a significant amount of data, and eventually these things come out, which is why one of the things that we look at under ESG is reputational risk. You know, if you're going to do something, how are you, what's the potential risk to your reputation if you're doing it wrongly or you misadvertise for some reason? And by and large, some consumers do seem willing to pay an extra premium for something that's real. Especially the younger generation that's coming out. I don't even know what they're called now. Are they Gen Zers?
I think they are this week.
Gen Alpha.
Gen
Alpha? Gen Z and going into Gen Alpha, yeah.
My kids are going to give me grief for not remembering that.
They're alphas.
I don't even know what I am, and I care even less. But apparently this stuff is important. But no, I do think that that's a really, really valid point, that it's there's a sense that consumers are also driving this now, particularly younger consumers, putting the emphasis back onto the companies to do the right thing. So in some ways, that makes your job easier?
It does from a certain perspective, but there's also a lot of work that goes into managing internal stakeholders, because there does tend to be a cost associated with taking these steps forward. But you've got to think about it. Again, take it out of the emotions of ESG or the politics or anything like that. You're worried about business continuity and sustainability. Well, you wouldn't stop upgrading your physical plant equipment because, you know, what you had was working and easy, even though maybe it leaked a little bit or had a little too much emissions, but it was fine. You know, eventually that piece of equipment's going to break down.
Yeah.
Well, the processes and procedures that go into ESG and trying to meet these standards and global guidelines, it's just like how you would handle operational expenses for other parts of your business. This isn't a nice to have. This is an operational expense. This is something that you do to manage and mitigate risk.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
And finally, I want to talk about, we've talked about internally within companies, but what about the regulatory environment, let's say across Southeast Asia or Asia more broadly? How are countries, governments now looking at ESG? Are they getting more activist in regulations, in wanting to have their businesses that are working inside their borders do the right thing?
In the way that the EU is, as you mentioned just now.
Yeah. So, I mean, it varies country by country, of course. And many of the countries in Asia already have some pretty clear and identifiable rules around environmental health and safety. So, like, how we've been operating, you know, make sure you're not spilling, your guys are safe, they've got PPE. So those rules are already in place, you know. And now in terms of ESG, you know, in terms of how things are progressing, it is in some countries looking at the EU as an example, not because of the regulations in particular, but because of how those regulations are impacting businesses in ASEAN, especially around financial reporting. You know, if you're a publicly listed company and you're listed on the stock exchange, you know, having to get ready to do that reporting is what is driving a lot of countries. Also here in Singapore, we've recently, of course, announced reporting for publicly listed companies is coming.
Yeah. So that landscape is evolving?
It is evolving. It is. And a lot of it, I do believe, is tied to the influx of foreign capital investment into ASEAN. And that's tied to the EU regulations for reporting and environmental sustainability.
As opposed to the UK, which is now no longer part of EU regulations and are now polluting their rivers and seas as we sit here. And they are now called poo rivers across the UK.
Dear. So exciting.
You've got to love those water companies. But so bringing exciting. It back to Singapore, how do you think Singapore stacks up in terms of ESG regulations generally?
Yeah, I think Singapore's really well positioned in ASEAN. I mean, and it's a well-earned reputation. Foreign national firms come here to headquarters and base their multinational works here in Singapore. The regulations are clear, followable, and honestly, if you just look around, Singapore is just a beautiful, clean place to be.
Awesome.
Beautiful.
Ida, thank you so much. Ida Welbank, sector leader, Enviro Solutions and Consulting. How do people find you if they want to get more information?
Best way to find me is on LinkedIn. There's only one of me. Search Ida Welbank and I'll be top of the list.
If you get 5 minutes and you could fix the UK, I'd really appreciate it.
Okay. If you're paying. I mean, she doesn't do this for free.
Me personally,
I mean, it's a job,
I'll
you know?
I'll pay you to clean up the British rivers.
I'll send you a proposal.
Okay.
Ida, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.